Hello and welcome to the Autism Mums podcast.
I'm Victoria.
And I'm Natalie.
We're two sisters raising autistic children who know the joy, the challenges and the everyday moments.
This is a supportive space for honest conversations, practical tips, shared strength and expert advice.
Whether you're celebrating a win, surviving a meltdown or just trying to make it through the day, we're right here with you.
Join us as we share the ups, the downs, and everything in between parenting autistic children.
In today's episode, we're returning to a subject that we've covered before, PDA, but this time we want to go a little bit more deeper into it as it's something that comes up on a regular basis, and particularly as we were talking about the transitions that the children are going through as they grow up and how you then handle that with a PDA child.
PDA, which is pathological demand avoidance, and the behaviours that come with it are often misunderstood. We've both learned so much more since the episode we did on this before, and we want to share that experience with you.
Yeah, we're going to make sure that we draw on guidance from the PDA Society, and we'll combine that with our own lived experience, talking about common traits, what happens when everyday demands trigger intense anxiety, how a rights-based approach changes our responses, and where you can go to for support.
The PDA Society describes PDA as a profile of autism where the standout feature is demand avoidance. So people struggle with everyday demands, even ones they want or need to do.
Yeah, it's often mistaken for naughtiness or being really stubborn. So without the right understanding and support, PDA can really have a massive effect on daily life.
The key point is this: demand avoidance is usually driven by anxiety and a need for control. I think that's been a really important one for me to understand. I try to come at it as a point of view of my child's anxious and they need support rather than them just being defiant.
Again, I know we say this a lot, but it's can't rather than won't. But it's just the way those behaviours come out that I think to someone who doesn't know what's going on, it can look like your child's being really, really naughty.
Yeah.
I know that we have to be really careful about the language that we use so that it doesn't come across as a demand, because if it sounds like a demand, then it can feel threatening to the child. And then their anxiety that they feel spikes into panic. So yeah, the PDA Society outlines four common responses: fight, flight, freeze, and fawn.
Yeah, so fight can look like oppositional or aggressive behaviour. Flight may be leaving, hiding, running away. I know some children climb trees to get away to somewhere that's nice and quiet and away.
Sound like you have experience of this.
And freeze can be zoning out or becoming non-verbal. And fawn is people-pleasing or over-agreeing to avoid conflict.
Well, that's interesting. So one of my children certainly freezes. So it's the zoning out and becoming non-verbal. That's what I would see a lot. And I didn't have a good understanding of what PDA was for a while. I saw it as the fight that you would see. So it took me a little longer to realise that's what was going on.
I think between us, all four of those things are kind of covered by our tits.
Yeah, I think we can cover those for sure. One of the things that we have to be careful about is, for example, saying, you need to go and have a shower now. That is just going to be a flat out no. So I've learned over time that it's better to say, I think it would be a good idea to have a shower today. When would suit you? When do you think? Then even if we agree a time, that would be forgotten. So I would then likely put a reminder on. So it's not me then pressuring. It's 2 o'clock. You said you'd have a shower at 2 o'clock. I get Alexa to do it. That seems to work better for us. But a teacher at my son's first school actually used some of those techniques with him. It was in a report that was done where someone was observing that she actually worked those into her language. It said in the report that he was wearing gloves, but had been given a laptop. Yeah. So as she walked away, she said, gloves on, rather than you must take your gloves off. It was things like that.
Like just a little suggestion, but also not even using the eye contact or anything.
Yes, that's what was picked up on. I think it was quite skillfully done. And that's what's needed. I've only really become aware of it in the last few months of how much more I need to be using the techniques that would work for PDA rather than autism.
Yeah, I think it's something we've talked about as well, is as the children are getting older and you want to encourage a bit of independence in some areas, but also it's trying to find that right balance, isn't it? By gently encouraging, but not pushing and making them stressed.
Yeah, definitely.
PDA goes beyond just demand avoidance.
Yeah, many people with PDA have what's known as a spiky profile. So they have real strengths in some areas and big challenges in others. For example, a child could be really articulate, but completely unable to answer a direct question when stressed. The words just go. I mean, that's definitely one of my children.
Yeah, and that masking can be exhausting. Surface behaviour can make it look as though someone is coping, but that coping uses so much energy that it needs to break down later.
Yeah, I was recently actually in a meeting about one of my children and this came up, and I was really surprised that they obviously cover it so well that nobody sees those struggles. It's pretty much as we've just described. Because they're articulate, no one's seeing like the intense emotions that are going on inside, because they're managing that superficial social interaction.
Yeah, so is it then like coming out?
Yeah, what I then see is refusal and just an inability to cope and exhaustion. There are some approaches that are definitely going to be worse if a child has PDA.
Yeah, so like strict routines, behaviour charts. Did you ever try those?
Oh, yes. Yeah, when they were tiny.
Reward charts. And I remember the naughty step as well.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Or the timeout step or whatever it was, but that never worked for us anyway. And those things can increase anxiety and erode trust as well, which is a huge issue, isn't it? And can make avoidance even worse.
Yeah, it's not about being soft, but I think that's what can be perceived. You can be seen as being like a really soft parent, but it's actually about being strategic.
Yeah, I think it can be seen like you don't have boundaries with your kids. And I remember when we went to the early birth course, we were always told you can have boundaries, but with an elastic band around.
I like that.
Yeah, it's really good. So I often think about that. What's really important to focus on and what isn't so important, weigh it up.
Yeah, because if demands are escalating anxiety, forcing a child to comply, it can just harm their well-being and safety over time.
Yeah, and I find it goes in waves as well. It's constantly assessing where my child's at.
Yeah.
So is this a tricky week? You know, we're coming back at the moment. We're just coming back after the holidays. Usually there's a little bit of a settling down period back into routine. So I do tend to take demands away as much as possible and then build them up again once he's settled back into that routine.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I also find the counting down does not work well with my son. That stresses him.
What do you mean, like slightly so, warning for leaving somewhere? Or
it's more like getting ready for bed. So time to brush teeth. 5 seconds. Yes.
Oh,
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Can't do that.
Oh, no.
Absolutely not. But I can with my daughter. She loves it. It's kind of a game.
I suppose that's the thing. It's always going to vary so much between children as well. What works and what doesn't. So you certainly have to try a few things, don't you, before you realise what's helpful and what's really not helpful.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's that demand that you must do it now. I think if you can remove that, and there's not actually lots that has to be done now. I find that if you insist on that now, like you were saying, everything has to be done right to this timeline, what actually can happen is you get a big explosion or shut down and the thing that you were trying to get done then can't be done. So if that's getting out of the house to go to school or whatever it is, but if you handle it wrong and with the come on, because sometimes we are worried, we've got places to go. You know, you might be dropping your child to school and then you might be going to work and you might be, and you're feeling that. But if you push that, in my experience, what we find works is just to accept that you're going to be late sometimes and give them that extra space that they need.
I find it's like I'm living in two different worlds. It's like there's my internal world that's going, oh my God, we're supposed to have left 5 minutes ago. We're going to be late and I've got this after this when I've dropped him off. And oh my God. And then, but on the outside, I'm like, take some breaths. And then, yeah, that's fine. Let's go and get ready now. It's not a problem. Not a problem. You don't like your shoes today? No problem. Wear some wellies.
You're trying to keep it all really calm.
Yes. And then you wonder why you're exhausted later.
That's it. It does take a lot out of you, doesn't it? I think because you need to make sure that you're responding with compassion and curiosity and co-regulation rather than control.
Yeah. And we're on their side. It's okay. Yeah, we've got this. You can do this.
Yeah.
Fine. Yeah.
Definitely.
You must do this because I am your mother and I tell you.
You've taken me back to when we went away and we were going through the airport, you know, trying to get to security, and there was just that pressure. And it's difficult when you've got to get somewhere, but actually it's better just to slow down and validate feelings. I mean, they put us on the plane first. That shows you how well that part went.
So different ways of phrasing things that we found helpful are, instead of saying put your coat on now, would you like to try the red coat or the blue coat today?
Okay. Well, I couldn't give that choice because then that's a choice. But
you
might have to adapt it, see what works for your child.
Okay. Or do you want to put your coat on before we go, or do you want to take it in the car?
Yes, that one would work.
Or for a task, you could say something like, I'm going to do the first bit and you could do the second bit.
Yeah.
Get me to start.
I find that's really good with getting dressed.
Yes. So this is chaining, isn't it?
Yeah. So I might start by helping put the t-shirt on and then letting my child take over and do the other bits. But you work it backwards. You just add a bit further back each time.
So we wanted to talk a little bit about the human rights angle part of this. The PDA Society frames this as a human rights issue, focusing on dignity, freedom and choice, not simply compliance.
Yeah, that's right. The UN Convention on the Rights of a Child and General Human Rights Principles support listening to children and offering choice where possible. And that perspective helps justify gentler, respectful strategies, even when they feel counterintuitive.
School settings often struggle with PDA because surface compliance can hide deep need. And this is where good assessment and clear educational planning matter.
Yeah, I totally experienced this. They look fine when they're with us.
Oh, they're just labelled as the naughty kid.
Yeah, I suppose it depends, going back to the framework of the fight, flight,
fawn and freeze,
which one your child exhibits.
Yeah, and I suppose that also comes with understanding and diagnosis. That's where diagnosis is really helpful.
So where can you go to get help?
The PDA Society has resources and a trained team with lived experience who can point you to UK-based resources and local support.
Professional assessment and tailored support can make a big difference. And lived experience groups also have practical strategies that aren't in clinical guidance. We will put links to these in the show notes.
So just to recap then, PDA is an autism profile where demands trigger anxiety and a need for control. Responses commonly look like fight, flight, freeze or fawn, and can combine with a spiky profile and masking.
Shift the mindset, focus on understanding, co-regulation and control choice. Move away from the punitive systems that increase anxiety. Just think, rights, dignity and safety.
If this episode helped you, please do share it and check the show notes for PDA Society links. If you'd like to send us your PDA questions in any real-life scenarios, we'll use them in future episodes.
Thanks for joining us today on the Autism Mums podcast.
We hope you have found a little support, a little solidarity, and a reminder that you are not in this alone.
If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love it if you'd follow the show and share it with another parent or carer who might need to hear it.
And if you've got a story or a moment you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you at www.theautismmums.com.
Until next time, take care.